Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sarah Shord, who is a prison rights advocate and contributing editor at Solitary Watch, a web-based project aimed at bringing an end to the widespread use of solitary confinement in the United States. From 2009 to 2010, Sarah spent 410 days in solitary confinement while held as a political hostage by the Iranian government. Her memoir, co-authored with her husband, Shane Bauer, and friend Josh Vattel, who were held hostage with her, will be published in the spring of 2014. She has an article at the ACLU's website, "The Iranian Government Locked Me in Solitary Confinement for 410 Days. Today, my thoughts are with the hunger strikers." Welcome to Background Briefing, Sarah Shord.
Thank you, Ian. It's great to be here.
This hunger strike, of course, has been going on for 9 days now in California, and it's largely over the issue of solitary confinement, is it not?
Yes, it is.
And how many people are in solitary confinement in California? My understanding, in the United States itself, there are 80,000 prisoners being held in solitary confinement. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that is, by many accounts, a conservative estimate, or that's an approximation, because a lot of that data just simply isn't made available. But in California, there's known to be 3,000 prisoners held in isolation units. In many cases, no human contact, and often in windowless cells. At Pelican Bay, in the SHU, which is a single housing unit, one of the many euphemisms that the CDCR uses for solitary confinement, the average time that a prisoner is held in the SHU is 7.5 years.
So this form of punishment, upon the punishment of jail itself, it seems extraordinarily cruel. And there's an op-ed in Wednesday's New York Times by Wilbert Rideau, who spent 44 years in a prison in Louisiana State Penitentiary for manslaughter. And in his op-ed in the New York Times, he talks about having spent 12 years in various solitary confinement cells, and he's come to the conclusion that it's, in fact, a form of torture. And I guess you could speak to that, since you were held in solitary confinement for 410 days. Just to touch on the op-ed in Wednesday's New York Times, it mentions that there are men like Thomas Silverstein in a federal prison system who has been in solitary for 30 years, and Albert Woodfox and Herman Wallace, who have been in Louisiana cells for more than 40 years each. I cannot believe that a person could stay alive and sane after 40 years, because 410 days were grueling enough for you. So just give me your response to that, if you will. I'm sorry to go on a bit, but I was very moved by that op-ed.
Wilbert Rideau's piece was really excellent, and I'm so happy to, those of us that are advocating against this cruelty and torture in our prisons across the nation are so happy that more and more people are paying attention to it. And it's in no small part to this historic hunger strike, which is the third that's happened in the last 2 years. And the last I heard, at least 2,500 inmates were still refusing food after 9 days, which is an extremely long time to not eat. I think that one of the really excellent points that Wilbert Rideau made is that prisoners have a lot to lose and very little to gain. And to take a stand like this and to subject themselves to even more hardship and even more risks really shows how dire their situation is. And you mentioned the case of Herman Wallace, one of the Angola Three, who actually very recently, there's been some excellent news. It's way too long in coming, but Herman was recently transferred to a 10-unit pod. So after 41 years, he's no longer in solitary confinement. And that's because of extreme health complications that he's had. He has terminal cancer. So the prison authorities have finally found it in there. I don't know how they came to this conclusion, but I think really it's a result of a tremendous amount of pressure from Amnesty International and organizations across the country. So it's nice to have a little bit of good news. But in response to your comment about how a person can endure years, let alone decades, in complete isolation, it's impossible to endure it without sustaining very permanent and lasting psychological damage. Just to speak a little bit to my own experience, it was probably weeks into my experience into being in solitary confinement when my mind really started to slip. I had extreme paranoia. I had insomnia. I'd spend large portions of my day just crouched down on all fours by the small food spot in my cell door, listening for sounds or anything that might distract me. I had horrible nightmares, and I eventually began to have hallucinations. And I often, more than once, I had violent panic attacks where I lost control and screamed and beat at the walls of my cell until my knuckles bled. This is a small taste of what happens to a human being. A lot of the things that I've read about and heard about are really too horrifying to mention.
Again, I'm speaking with Sarah Shurd, who is a prison rights advocate and contributing editor at Solitary Watch, a web-based project aimed at bringing an end to the widespread use of solitary confinement in the United States. And she has an article at ACLU's website, "The Iranian Government Locked Me in Solitary Confinement for 410 Days. Today, my thoughts are with the hunger strikers." In your article at the ACLU site, Sarah, you mentioned you had PTSD. So God knows what it'd be like. 4 and 10 days, that was bad enough. For 4 or 5 decades, it's just inhuman. But obviously it's difficult to shake this experience. Even when it's over, it's not over, I take it.
Yeah, and that's extremely important to emphasize, Ian, because once most prisoners in our society, in our country, and in the world will eventually be released, some of them much sooner than others, but when you are released, and many prisoners in our country are released directly from solitary confinement, you're completely unequipped to deal with the volume of stimulus and the level of social interaction that you've been deprived of in the free world. And for the year and 2 months that I was in solitary confinement, all I dreamed of was being with my family, being with my loved ones, and of course my now husband, Shane Bauer, and my friend Josh Patel. I dreamed of being with them every second. But when I finally was, it was very difficult to make eye contact with people. It physically hurt. I had a hard time being in crowds. I didn't like being touched. It was a long time before just my body adjusted. And really, years later, I'm still experiencing effects of PTSD, and I've gotten the best care available. And I have an extremely supportive community and family. Most prisoners don't have that. Most prisoners that come out are not, no one holds their hands. And that is a huge problem in our society, and it accounts for a lot of the recidivism. People that don't get the resources that they need in prison and are, in fact, tortured in prison and then released in society often regress into old behaviors, and that's not good for anyone.
And Sarah Shurd, the organization that you work for and a contributing editor at Solitary Watch, which is this web-based project aimed at bringing an end to the widespread use of solitary confinement in the United States, it would seem that your work's cut out. Hasn't solitary confinement risen precipitously in U.S. prisons now for the last decade?
Yeah, faster than the actual prison population. And it's a very interesting history. For most of the 20th century, solitary confinement was barely used in our prisons. The Quakers started to use it in some of their penitentiaries in the 1790s, and they thought it would give people a chance to pray and a space for introspection. And instead, it drove people crazy. And the U.S. High Court ruled that it was unsafe, and we stopped using it. And it was really only in the 70s that we started to build these solitary facilities with the war against drugs, and that many have come to call the war against poverty. And the huge explosion in our prisons has made them places that are completely out of control. And I think that I see solitary confinement as the deep end of our very broken prison system. The worst punishment that our system doles out, but it's also used very routinely and often arbitrarily with little to no oversight. And there are many other ways to run prisons that are safer and more effective.
And in your article, Sarah Sheward, at the ACLU's website, the Iranian government locked me in solitary confinement for 410 days. Today, my thoughts are with the hunger strikers. You mentioned prison psychiatrist Terry Cooper, who estimates that approximately 50% of prison suicides nationwide happened in solitary confinement. That means that prisoners in solitary are 19 times more likely to commit suicide. So I'm just trying to figure out, what are the prison authorities thinking? If you keep somebody in for four decades or five decades, as are the cases that we mentioned that are in the op-ed in the New York Times on Wednesday, it's hard to come to the conclusion that that's some kind of remedial punishment that's being meted out that goes beyond any kind of human decency. It's unbelievably hard to get your head around. But what is their rationale for solitary confinement? What are the correctional people's rationale?
Well, one of the rationales that you hear a lot is that it's for the prisoner's own safety, whether they are in some, they often use that as an excuse with LGBTQ or gay inmates. They also use that as an excuse for inmates that may have had some kind of trouble with another inmate, that they need to be removed for their own safety from the general population. I heard the same thing when I was in Iran. When I begged and pleaded for a cellmate, they told me that there was no American woman and that I wasn't safe with Iranian women, which was, first of all, a complete lie, because the women in prison where I was held in Tehran did everything they could to reach out to me and help me. And second of all, I was never safe from my own mind. And now that the UN has been definitive on the practice of solitary confinement, the UN Convention Against Torture, which the U.S. is a signatory of, has ruled that prolonged solitary confinement should be abolished, and the Special Rapporteur on Torture, Juan Mendez, made it very clear that any period exceeding 15 days can cause lasting damage and constitutes torture. Now, the way that our prisons in the U.S. get around this is they call it by different names. They call it administrative segregation. They call it the SHU. They say it's for people's safety. None of this is true. And many, many studies now have proven that the practice doesn't make sense and it doesn't work. But it's used in our prisons as a method of control in an effort to break prisoners that may be a little extra trouble for the guards. The guards can find any excuse, a petty rule violation, even something like profanity or moving too slowly, to throw someone in solitary confinement. And then when they begin to decompensate and get worse and worse, and the longer they're there, the more difficult it is to reintegrate them into the prison population. You hear stories of prisoners starting fights with guards in solitary just because they're so lonely, they need any kind of human contact to get them through the day. And of course, starting a fight adds to the time that you've been sentenced, and the cycle goes on and on and on, and people get stuck there for years or decades.
Well, my understanding is that the California prison system said it did revise its solitary confinement policies in March, but the inmates now on strikes apparently say these changes have done nothing to limit the length of solitary confinement sentences, which continue indefinitely, and inmates are calling for an end to this group punishment, such as race-based lockdowns that restrict an entire race of inmates for one prisoner's violation. And, of course, the California Corrections Department are being sued in federal courts over this practice. What's your understanding of these so-called reforms?
Well, the reforms offered by the CDCR in most cases have amounted to a pull-up bar in the pod yard, access to an electronic appliance. There's one prisoner that I communicate with, and he wrote me leading up to the hunger strike, and he said it seems that they're trying very hard to keep their SHU program alive, but no matter how many bells and whistles they attach to it, the systemic isolation, and this is a quote, with the intent and purpose of breaking that person, is still a form of torture. It's kind of crazy when you put it all into perspective. Do they really think a bowl and a pull-up bar makes it constitutional? So the changes that have been Band-Aids. And it used to be that one of the biggest problems in California is, of course, people being put in solitary because they're labeled so-called gang affiliates. And it only takes a shred of by any standards, not even very illegitimate evidence, to label someone a gang affiliate. Sometimes someone who's a known gang member only has to mention you in a letter, or you could have a picture of some kind of sign or a tattoo that you got before prison. Really, next to nothing can land you in solitary as a gang affiliate. And that's one of the demands of the hunger strike. And their demands are very, very reasonable, to end the system of gang affiliation and to end the use of prolonged solitary confinement. They're not asking to be released. Most prisoners that I speak to accept the fact that they deserve punishment for the crimes they've committed. But solitary confinement is a punishment. It's a sentence on top of a sentence without judge, trial, or jury. And for that reason, as this prisoner that wrote me said, it's completely unconstitutional.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Sarah Sherwood. And, of course, the irony is, in terms of our congressmen in Washington, a lot of lawmakers in Washington are calling for an end to the force feeding of detainees at Guantanamo. But I'm not aware of too many California politicians calling for an end to similar practices that may come into play in response to this hunger strike here in the state of California.
No, we've heard nothing from Jerry Brown, and so far the CDCR has said that they are unwilling to negotiate with the prisoners. That was one of the excellent points that Wilbert Rideau in the New York Times made today, is that really all you have to do to solve a lot of these problems and meet these very reasonable demands is talk to the prisoners. And the prison officials in California are not even willing to do that. But I do believe that the renewal of this hunger strike is a sign that prisoners have reached the tipping point. And now that they've made their grievances visible, politicians and prison officials and the public can no longer afford to ignore the horrors that are happening inside our prisons. And I just encourage everyone who's angry about this to do something about it, you know, to really play their part.
Well, Sarah Sherwood, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Sarah Sherwood, who's a prison rights advocate and contributing editor at Solitary Watch, a web-based project aimed at bringing an end to the widespread use of solitary confinement in the United States. From 2009 to 2010, Sarah spent 410 days in solitary confinement while held as a political hostage by the Iranian government. Her memoir, co-authored with her husband, Shane Bauer, and friend Josh Fattel, who were held hostage with her, will be published in the spring of 2014. She has an article at the ACLU's website, "The Iranian Government Locked Me in Solitary Confinement for 410 Days. Today, my thoughts are with the hunger strikers." This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Claire Goldsmith. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. The headline written down in America.